This is Side Podcast episode 62, Back to the Flying Business. Coming up on today's show, we say goodbye to Super Aguri and hello to Kurz, plus we recap the news from Turkey. I guess we ought to start by apologising for there not being a show last week.
What happened?
Well, we left it later and later and then we just ran out of time.
To be honest with you, didn't think anybody would notice.
No, everyone did though.
We got a bit of grief on the comments, didn't we?
We had plenty of comments asking where it was. One even from the Adelaide one who said, sorry to whinge in my first email to the site, but what's happened to the weekly podcast?
It's a new strategy for gaining more feedback. We're going to annoy people to the point that they come along and comment.
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for, we haven't done a show for 3 weeks. So maybe it's been a good 3 weeks or...
Jesus, has it been that long?
At some point it was a good week.
Right, who for?
For Nigel Stepney.
It's going to be a long show, isn't it?
Yeah. His new colleague in GT Racing has been saying nice things about him. The guy said that their wives get on very well, and on a personal level, he likes him very much. The best bit, though, he said he was very open and accessible.
I'd say a little bit too open sometimes.
Yeah. It's been a bad week for Manicor again. Bernie has said that the French GP will be held there for the last time this year. Didn't he say that last year?
Cue the sad French music.
We made a really nice goodbye video last year, didn't we?
It was tearful and poignant, I felt.
So do we have to do another one this year?
That's going to make us look pretty silly, isn't it?
It has.
Goodbye twice.
It's been a good week for Robert Kubica, who has won the Lorenzo Bandini Trophy, an award for an outstanding figure in motorsport. It was based on his performance from last year, and he's driving himself to the ceremony in his F1 car, 11 kilometres from Faenza to Brisiella in Italy. Today.
He's driving an F1 car?
Yeah.
That's 7 miles.
It's a straight road, though.
Are they just going to cordon off all of that road?
I guess so, but why is he starting there?
That's the base of Toro Rosso, isn't it?
What, so is he, like, holed up in their factory for a bit?
That's a bit peculiar.
Yeah.
And presumably, when they give him the award, they're just going to hold it out, and he's going to grab it as he goes by.
Like a drive-thru?
Yeah, do 180 and head back. It's going to be a short ceremony.
It's been a bad week for Adrian Sutil, who had to go to the police regarding an attempted blackmail. A personal computer of his was sold or given away a couple of years ago, and the new owner was asking for €10,000 in return for all the information that was on there. Thankfully, the attempt was foiled and Sutil got away lightly. Lesson learned, dispose of one's computers properly.
I heard that Hamilton was in some way implicated in this because there were emails between himself and Sutil on the machine. I don't understand why the blackmailer didn't go directly to Hamilton, who clearly has far more money.
If they're just email saying, hi, how are you? You're not going to get much for that, are you?
Maybe not.
News and views.
3 weeks ago...
Oh my God.
Yeah, sorry about that. We saw the demise of Super Aguri.
Was that this season? That seems like a very long time ago.
Yeah. Firstly, they were refused entry in Turkey. The transporters and the motorhome were not allowed into the paddock. Someone told FOM that they wouldn't be racing. Do we assume that's Honda?
No, I'm assuming it was Bernie's decision. And he said, you're not coming in. Your name's not on the list.
Aguri Suzuki rushed into meetings with Honda and Vigel, but it was decided that Vigel couldn't support the team and Honda didn't want to anymore, so a statement was issued.
I did already cover this on a blog post a very long time ago. I can't actually remember what I wrote. My memory's not that good, but I think basically the gist of it was Aguri Suzuki wasn't business competent and therefore the team went under due to the fact he didn't manage his books well.
Well, Colin Collis has come out and basically agreed with you.
Oh, yay.
He said that independent teams do have a future in F1, it's just that Super Aguri didn't have the right business model. He said, we are a constructor, we are independent, we have strong partners because we have a clean company and we have a good business plan. It is a proper structure.
I wonder what he means by a clean company there.
Dodgy dealings, perhaps?
Maybe. Maybe in this moment we don't.
While clearly you have no heart and are a big meanie.
Guilty.
Some people are sad to see them go. We had a voicemail from Jordan who pointed out some of the best bits of Super Aguri.
I kind of think it's a little disappointing, especially from when they started in 2006. I mean, they were not the best team, but, you know, they were able to do things at times and, you know, try to beat teams. I mean, last year we saw, you know, when they were beating Honda and Toyota and at times STR, I thought that was pretty sweet. And when Sato passed Alonso at Canada, that was really cool. I mean, I remember the announcers, they were just going crazy. They're like, this is a Super Aguri. This is a Super Aguri passing a McLaren. And I'm just like, it was one of those fluky things you would never see happen again. And give him a couple more laps, he probably would have passed Kimi there too. But Sato and Davidson did a great job. Hopefully it's not the end of their F1 careers because they are very good drivers.
Well, I'm rooting for Davidson to become a commentator.
Yes, did a good job.
Yeah.
But a bit early for him, maybe.
Yeah, he probably wouldn't like it just yet.
There are rumours that Sato might be a good fit as Renault's third driver, or maybe even second driver.
Isn't there going to be some kind of shootout test or something?
I don't know if that's true or not. It's been ages since we had a good shootout in Formula One, but either way, it sounds like both of them should be able to find some employment elsewhere within Formula One soon.
You know how Kurz is coming in next year?
I heard that rumour.
Honda have revealed that they run a low-level version of Kurz in their car already this
year.
They're
on the wall.
They haven't said when.
Right.
But we're assuming it was a recent test.
Yeah. Presumably it wasn't the full working version. It was just some kind of mock-up or model to make sure that the concept worked, was it?
I guess so. But does that mean they've given up on this year already?
Didn't Braun say there would only be two major updates to the Honda cars this year and the rest of their efforts were going into 2009? I think he said that earlier in the year, so I wouldn't be surprised if they're already focusing on that yet.
This news came out when the teams had a meeting on Vijay Mallya's boat during the Turkey weekend to discuss the future of the technology within Formula One. Both Frank Williams and Ross Brawn believe it is the right way to go.
Well, Frank Williams would, because he's just bought a minority, quote unquote, stake in that company that he's moved down to his offices from up north. So, you know, he would want Kurz to go that way now after that kind of investment.
They were discussing Max's letter, which proposed stepped increases to the energy recovery, and all the teams responded to the letter unanimously.
Which is a first for Formula One team, surely.
And they have asked to maintain the level of energy recovery in 2009 and 10, and not to introduce any new regulations in this area until the end of 2009.
I think the teams are wrong in this instance, both in their reluctance to develop and to innovate.
Well, they say that the costs will get out of control.
Yeah, but I think they're misunderstanding public opinion in terms of what Formula One is doing to the planet and what it needs to do in order to make it relevant. And I believe they need to be doing more in terms of energy recovery. And I do think they should be doing more in terms of development and research in this area.
Well, we have said before that if it wasn't such a locked down framework that they might be more interested.
Yeah.
But it looks like they're not interested at all.
No, they want to do the minimum they possibly can do and use the smallest amount of energy recovery possible, which is a big shame, really. And I'm especially dismayed at Honda, because I would have thought it would have fitted right in with their Earth Dream plans and all their, you know, and all their eco-friendly livery.
Well, you said they're misunderstanding public opinion, so we want to know what the public think.
Either in the comments or via voicemail. More voicemails, please, because we've got two this week, but more is always appreciated.
Yep, the number is 012128TRACK, which is 012128872225.
Or just on the comments on SoPodcast.com. What do you think? Are the teams right or wrong with their decision not to support more Kurz development and increase Kurz development in the future?
He's flying! Jack!
Why are you playing clips of Titanic?
Because Lewis was flying prior to the Turkish Grand Prix from the rafters.
Yes.
In his musical play thing when he came in with his big racing suit.
Yes, he had a bit of a PR disaster, didn't he?
Gold watch on show.
We don't like to make fun of Formula One drivers, obviously, but they just make it so easy.
It was a little bit embarrassing, but his week started off even worse than that, didn't it?
He started off the week by comparing himself to Nelson Mandela.
Did he say?
He said, "A few people have questioned my commitment, my ability to drive. I'm not Superman, but I believe I have the ability to win a world championship. Everybody makes mistakes. I'm sure Nelson Mandela, at 90-odd, still makes mistakes."
Right.
He's not Superman, but he is Nelson Mandela.
I see. And he's allowed to make some mistakes. That's understandable, including the PR disaster that was agreeing to do the Vodafone thing. That must count as one of his mistakes.
Back to the flying business. He said he was just trying to get himself into the acting zone. I have two questions.
Just two?
Yeah. One, if that was his acting zone, it wasn't very good. What's he playing at?
Just hanging.
And two, since when is he a trained actor?
Ah, well, actually, I think I might have found some evidence of Lewis Hamilton in a film.
Really?
Do you want to hear it? Yeah, do you want to hear it?
Yeah.
Let me play you the clip.
I don't think that was Lewis, was it?
It's the sort of thing he might have said. If anyone gave him a chance to be in a film, that would be his line.
Later in the weekend, he said, "Now that I've seen the footage, it's one of the worst things I've seen."
Really? I thought it was one of Cameron's best works.
Not Titanic.
I enjoyed it a lot.
"I have a cool image and things like that don't help."
Oh, talking about that cool image quote, I think that's a little bit weird that he talks about his image as if it's a third person. Do you think when you meet him, he shakes your hand and says, "Hi, I'm Lewis Hamilton, meet my cool image"?
Don't be ridiculous, leave him alone. Although, Max Clifford, PR guru, said he comes across like a performing puppet. It doesn't seem to have hurt him that much, though, with sponsorship deals rumoured with Pepsi and Reebok $20 million each or something.
Absolutely. I did like Weber's quote. He had made a little dig about him at the weekend when he said, what I love about my team is that I'm employed to drive the car, and if I have to do a PR day, I get to ride a jet ski. So much easier that way, isn't it?
Enough of this nonsense. We're going to take a short break, but we'll be back with our thoughts on Turkey, a fantasy races update, and a look ahead to Monaco. If you've got any comments or feedback, why not leave us a voicemail? It's free if you're a Skype user. Find us under the username SidePodcast. Or you can ring us in the UK on 012128-TRACK. Internationally, it's +44 121 28 87 225. If you're the more shy and retiring type, you can always email me, christine@sidepodcast.com.
The race.
We're catching up now. We're up to last weekend. Starting with free practice, which was dull until everyone got going. Then it was mental.
Their cars were all over the place, weren't they? They cleaned the track prior to free practice, and that made sure there was no rubber down, and it was very green. And once the cars came out, they were spinning left, right, and centre. They should do that every week, I reckon.
Well, Kathy left a comment saying, didn't Bernie suggest some time ago that the best way to improve the race would be to clean the track from all the rubber between Saturday and Sunday? Perhaps he was testing it. It seemed to work.
Yeah, that's a very good idea. And it's definitely spiced up the free practice. Although we were left hoping for more spins on Sunday, which never really materialised, did it?
Well, I guess we were quite lucky that there weren't any dog-related incidents. Can you believe that they let dogs into the track?
I don't think they let them in or encouraged them onto the track, but their response when questioned what had happened was somewhat laughable. They said they couldn't possibly be expected to keep dogs out of a racing track.
Well, not with massive fences or anything. No, it just can't be done.
Those pesky dogs, they're just too clever for them.
McLaren seemed to have an overwhelming problem with tyres and wheels.
Yes, doesn't seem to affect any other teams quite as much as it does them. We did get a response from them regarding what the problem with Kovalainen's accident was in Spain, didn't we? Although the explanation didn't really explain anything at all.
Something to do with lacquer.
Some part that shouldn't have been lacquered was lacquered, I think, and that made it slightly thicker, causing it to rub on the wheel rim. But again, never seemed to happen to anyone else.
And in Turkey, Hamilton couldn't get the performance out of his soft tyres, so he qualified on hard tyres. At first, he said he wasn't happy with the tyre choice, that he made the wrong decision. Then he had a break and talked to the team and came back with, I've just looked at the data and it was the right decision. My engineer told me my decision was right.
He has been spending way too much time with that trolley. Hasn't he?
Too many glasses of wine.
Mr. Bipolar himself, he's been talking to Hamilton, and now Hamilton doesn't know which tyres he wants to go for, and when he does go for a tyre, he doesn't know whether it's the right decision or not.
Oh, God.
Oh, I found it from the archives. That's a blast from the past, isn't it? There's a bit of Ted News this week.
Yeah, your best friend Ted Kravitz from ITV, he wrote on the website, and he has the best quote ever.
What did he say?
On the subject of qualifying, when Ted spoke to Ron Dennis afterwards, he said he was a bit tetchy. You can never tell with Ron. He's such an emotional bloke anyway. He might just be preoccupied with something else, a nagging annoyance about a tyre mark on the garage floor or that piece of paper not quite straight on his desk. That sounds about right.
Sounds like Ron.
Ted went on to say on Saturday that Ron was really annoyed because he knew that taking pole was the key to making Hamilton's strategy work.
Wasn't a great qualifying lap, was it? Opposite lock into turn 8. He was going completely the wrong direction when everyone else was going left, and it dropped him back down the grid.
It was a good lap on hard tyres, though.
It was just a bad lap, I think. Even on soft tyres, if he was going that direction through turn 8, he definitely had a problem and he was definitely going to be losing time. So no, it wasn't a very good showing from him. And he was out-qualified by his teammate.
Yeah, they had to switch him to a three-stop strategy, and they say that Bridgestone told him to.
Well, Lewis said in the press conference that Bridgestone had made him do a three-stopper, but Bridgestone refuted that later on in the day, didn't they?
Yeah, they say they didn't. They sort of blamed it on Lewis's driving style.
Yeah, and they said every other tyre on every other car was basically fine throughout the grid. They admitted they had problems last year, but they felt they'd solved them this year on everybody except for Lewis. So his driving style is so aggressive on the front tyres that it was causing just him problems.
It was good to have another variable in the race, though.
Yes.
A three-stopper.
Absolutely. I think we're missing out on the tyre war a little bit. With no variables in the tyre strategies and everybody doing the same number of stops or the optimum stops in any given race, we're never, ever going to see the kind of overtaking we've seen a couple of years ago. And we're definitely suffering. The race is suffering from it, and our enjoyment of the races are suffering from that, too.
There was a new camera view on the world feed.
Thermocam.
Yeah, it was brilliant.
It sounds a bit like a superhero, doesn't it?
It does, maybe.
It was positioned above Williams's pit box, and I think it might be tied to their new tyre warmers, which the team were trying out for the first time. I believe other teams in the grid, they might be wanting to try it out too. So we should be able to see more of them up and down the pit lane.
On the live comment feed during the race, Scott in Italy said, can we see the whole race in thermal?
Sounds like a great idea.
But Lou pointed out, how would we tell them apart?
Not such a great idea then.
No.
No. Scott, not thought through properly. Think harder next time. I like the idea of that though. All the cars in thermo, that would be brilliant.
There were two notable events. Webber just keeps on finishing.
A surprisingly good run of luck from the man who spent all of last year breaking down. Yeah, loads of points. He keeps getting them in the bag, doesn't he? Every race is Webber in the points.
And Kovalainen, he just overtook everybody.
He did. He fell behind after the safety car. He had a puncture and he fell to the back of the pack. And as often happens when you get a quick car behind a bunch of slow ones, you get loads of overtaking. And it was good to see. Very, very enjoyable.
And Hamilton did a good overtaking manoeuvre on Massa.
He did. He almost scared Massa, apparently, didn't he?
Massa. Yeah, Massa panicked when he saw that. Then the McLaren was just pulling away really quickly.
Yeah, he didn't know what was going on. So he might have had to be calmed down from the pit wall. But that was good. That was a great overtaking manoeuvre too.
It leaves the championship looking pretty close.
Three-way fight or four-way fight or even a five-way battle, do you reckon?
Well, the BMWs, they're fourth and fifth.
Yeah.
They're still in it, but yes. You'd have to think that they're going to have to start winning.
They're going backwards, actually. They're falling farther behind each race. They're not keeping up with the development path of the McLarens and the Ferraris, so I don't know if they're going to really be in it. But definitely, it's a three-way fight at the front, isn't it?
Definitely. I'm quite impressed with Massa because a few races ago he had 0 points.
Yeah, we were replacing him with anybody and everybody we could think of.
And now he's right up there.
Absolutely. Although I don't think the next few races are really going to suit him. I don't believe he's ever gone particularly well at Monaco. He might suffer this coming weekend. And I'm not entirely sure if he's ever done too well at Canada. So possibly you might see him falling a little bit backwards now.
Not only is there a close fight going on at the top of the championship, there's also one going on at the top of our Fantasy Races League.
Absolutely, with NG Racing and Fledglings. I think Nelson was hoping to make the jump to first position this week, but it didn't quite work out that way, did it?
Well, here are the top five. Night Races are in 5th place with 2357, Lucas Rock in 4th with 2372, Rubber Baby Buggy Bumpers in 3rd with 2425, NG Racing 2nd with 2444, and at number 1, Fledglings with 2465. Fledglings, NG Racing and Rubber Baby Buggy Bumpers are in the top 10 of everybody playing the game in all of the different leagues.
That is incredible. Well done to those.
Well, to put that in perspective, I'm currently 2,247.
you're what? Sorry? 2,000 and what?
2,247.
Wow, that's unbelievable. Look at the gap. Look at the distance. 10 out of 10 to those.
Daniel Galloway sent me the updated efficiency spreadsheet, which I do intend to publish somewhere.
That would be a great help to me because you never show it to me. No. Who is the most efficient driver on the grid?
At the moment, Kovalainen is getting the best points for his money.
Okay, I might have him this week then because I'm suffering. Week on week, I'm not doing very well.
Well, I have now changed my team to be people I don't like in the hopes that I will bring them some bad luck.
Right. So not only have you changed your people, you've changed your strategy too.
Yeah.
Okay, so what happened to this sandbagging business and starting slowly and building up to a crescendo?
Yeah.
News and views.
What more? Haven't we done this already?
Yeah, but because we've been away for so long, this is news that happened post-race.
Blimey, my legs are aching. Can I sit down yet?
No, we're nearly done.
Okay, get on with it then. What's happened in the last 7 days?
Well, the team's had a 3-day test at Paul Ricard, and Scott has been following it very closely, and he sent us a voicemail.
I suppose the main news is that Williams has now become the third team to test an engine shark cover.
I'm not sure. I make it the fifth because don't Toro Rosso and BMW also have a shark fin?
Well, I don't count the BMW one as a whole one because it's only little.
Right.
So maybe 4.5?
4.5.
Yeah.
Okay. What else has Scott got to say?
It's. I'm looking at a picture of it here now. It looks as though it's almost joined to the rear wing. Maybe they're trying to concentrate some airflow right onto the rear wing. Not sure, but it looks definitely closer than the fins which Renault and Red Bull used.
So if Red Bull started it and all these teams have introduced the same concept, why isn't it stealing?
Well, firstly, that Mr. New has got a lot to answer for single-handedly making the grid a lot more ugly.
Well, and Honda.
Okay. Adrian Newey and Honda.
Honda and their Dumbo Flugels.
Dumbo Flugels, yes. Okay, not just him then, but I'm not sure you can patent a aerodynamic device on a Formula One car. And I think once somebody can see it, it's fair game, they can steal it.
So it's not the same as texting someone whilst you're at a test and saying how things work and
nothing like
what's
that.
Inside.
No, but he's very, you know, people who do that, they're very open, I find.
And accessible.
Accessible, that's yeah. The word.
This year, the track was set up for 2 days like Monaco and one like Canada. And on the third day, it rained, which means the teams will have limited information for Canada.
Good, we like it when another variable gets thrown in the mix, don't we?
So here are some key points from the test. On day one, Hamilton was quickest. Raikkonen ran the holy nose for one lap. We think they're going to use it in Monaco.
Yep.
Vettel had a go in the STR3 and said he's looking forward to racing in it. But it does look like the new car needs a new gearbox because the old one doesn't fit. So Vettel might get a five-place grid drop.
That's really poor timing. The first race he finished of the year is the only race he didn't want to finish. His life sucks, doesn't it? It must suck to be Vettel right now.
Yeah, I mean, Bourdais didn't finish the last race and he doesn't get punished for it. It's not fair.
Oh dear. And it was him who delayed the car due to the accident he had in Spain. Had the car been brought out in Turkey, both of them would have been on fresh gearboxes and neither of them would have had a penalty.
It was a day of test drivers with Wurz for Honda, Liuzzi for Force India and Degrassi for Renault.
There's a rumour. Well, there's several rumours going around, but one of the rumours is Liuzzi might be set to replace Sutil, who's not had a stellar opening couple of races of the year, has he?
Yeah, but Sutil was so good last year.
Well, only against a rubbish teammate.
Oh, that's true.
He's not shone against Fisichella this year, and his stock's down, so Liuzzi could be in that seat soon.
OnsidePodcast.com, my FA fantasy.
AKA the blue and orange lion.
Yeah, he keeps changing his name. I kind of preferred the first one.
Yeah, what did he have to say?
He said, have you heard the news? Alan Permain and Steve Nielsen destroy Piquet in the latest RF1 podcast. I think Monaco is Nelson Piquet's last chance. After that, he'll go the obvious way.
I made a mistake in the race. So I think it's, rather than say he's had a disastrous start to the season, it's a bit of a sort of curate's egg. There's good bits and bad bits. But he needs to start having more good bits and the bad bits, and he needs to start doing that as soon as he can, because Formula One's a business, it's a very cutthroat business, and if people don't deliver then they go the obvious way. But I'm sure
my FA fantasy also came back with a quote from the Renault press release after the first day of testing. It's saying it was also important to give Luca a good number of laps in the car, which he needs at the moment.
That is a rather odd thing to say in a press release, isn't it? I wonder what they're planning to do. The only thing I could possibly think is that Degrassi is Brazilian, and whatever sponsor it is that's currently funding Alonso's seat in that team may be happy with an alternate Brazilian driver in replacement for Piquet Jr.
As ever, we want to hear your thoughts on this subject.
Yes, absolutely. We like rampant speculation.
Who's going to replace who? Yes. Will the test drivers get a seat?
Who's the first to fall in the Formula One grid this year?
Call us on 012128-TRACK to leave a voicemail. That's 012128-87225. Or leave a comment on the blog or email me.
Yes, tell us. Tell us what you think. How long will it be and who will be the first to go?
On day two, Bourdais took over testing duties from Vettel. He was really pleased with the car and said, "We are still learning about the car, which is the biggest thing for us, and trying to validate all the systems and make sure we don't break anything."
Says the man who broke everything
last
time out in that car. That's, yeah, okay. We better make sure we don't break anything.
Isn't it impossible to crash at Paul Ricard, though?
There's about 17,000 miles of runoff area there. You'd be halfway to Italy before you crashed a car in that circuit. So, yeah, he'd struggle to break anything there.
That would explain why there were no red flags.
There
weren't.
No, that's true.
And Piquet, he did almost 200 laps. He's obviously trying to impress someone.
He's got that message, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Loud and clear.
Day three was the wet day. Trulli led, followed by Piquet. But that was because it was raining. And Massa scrapped the test after just 19 laps and went home.
Don't blame him. Don't want to get wet, do you?
FIA consultant Tony Pannell has written to the teams with suggestions on the budget cap limits, starting at €175 million for 2009 and decreasing after that. It doesn't include expenditure on engines, CERS systems, marketing costs, or driver and team principal salaries. What does it include?
That would be wind tunnel costs, chassis development, and probably test and race expenses, but very little, actually.
Catering.
Catering, yeah. That's not very much, is the answer.
Gerhard Berger described the $175 million limit as madness.
Yeah,
saying,
I'd agree with that.
Where is the saving, then? Neither driver salaries nor engine costs are included in the $175 million. That means the manufacturers don't want to save anything. A private team cannot afford these sums in 1,000 years.
Right.
He suggests a limit should be more like €60 million.
It's a little bit confusing because half of the figures I'm looking at in terms of what teams spend are in dollars and these figures are all in euros. However, as far as we can make out, looking at F1 Racing from last year, they estimated that Toyota spent more than any other team in 2006. They managed to spend $400 million.
Which is about €250 million.
€250 million, but that includes engine development in that cost. So if you take out everything that isn't included, you're basically left with €100 million spent in 2006 by the most flamboyant team.
So obviously costs have gone up a little bit.
Yeah, since then.
But that's nowhere near the limit by the team that spent the most.
No, absolutely not. It's a ridiculously high figure. Obviously, Tony Pannell says it's going to decrease over the next couple of years, but I think it's too little, too late.
You know, I do F1 Minute 7 days a week.
Yes.
When there are races on.
Absolutely.
I may have upset someone.
Oh, really? What, like doing the extra 2 days?
Well, Craig Walker sent me an email saying, love the show, but I certainly wish you would not reveal race winners in the titles of F1 Minute. When iTunes or any podcast aggregator downloads shows and displays the titles, one does not want to have a race they've not yet viewed ruined for them. Maybe it would have been better to say Turkish GP results or something equally benign.
Well, I can see what he means. However, F1 Minute is a little bit behind and it doesn't come out instantly after the race. And if you haven't already caught the results 4 hours after the race is finished, you're probably a little bit behind. What I would say is on iTunes, you can just shrink it with the arrow. Do you know what I mean? You press like the expand shrinker thing.
You can, yeah.
And then you don't see it. And that's what I'd recommend you do. If you don't want to know the result of the qualifying or the result of the race, just de-expand. What's the word for for the opposite of expand?
Collapse.
There you go. So just collapse the thing in iTunes and then you won't know anymore. Just say F1 Minute, your bite-sized Formula One information. And you'll know that there's something to watch, but don't go there.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, F1 Minute is a news podcast.
Yes.
It's like if you went to a website to look at news.
And the thing is, if you don't put the headline in there, how long do you wait till you do put the headline in there? Because on Monday, you're bound to talk about the race winner or Tuesday or whatever. So, no, I think it's a technological problem rather than something you're doing wrong there.
Craig did point out something where I was being a bit stupid, though. He carried on in his email to say, on the 4th of April, and again recently, you said you'd be podcasting 7 days a week on race weekends. Now...
That's clever.
In the US, even the most lazy among us wouldn't claim that the weekend is any longer than 5 days, Wednesday through Sunday.
Right.
And most Americans are comfortable with the notion of a 2-day weekend. You must be either very efficient or very resourceful indeed to cram 7 days into what appears to be considerably less time.
Hats off to you. I didn't even notice that.
No,
and
that's
apparently,
true.
If you've done it twice, that's incredibly stupid.
Yeah.
Consider your hand slapped.
We mentioned Facebook on the last preview video.
Well, you say you did. I had nothing to say on the video. I'm behind the camera.
Of course, and our Facebook numbers have gone up since then.
That's a surprise. Who knew the promotion worked?
I know. We're going to be putting some more topics on there, so stay tuned.
Yes.
But one topic that is on there, Dan Brunel posted about a Cypodcast Canadian meetup.
Yeah, sounds really interesting.
But we're not going to be there.
No. I mean, I'm sure if you read the full thread, it's very clear that it's not our idea. And Dan's planning to meet up with other Cypodcast listeners to discuss Formula One and Cypodcast and various other things. We're not flying to Canada.
Unfortunately.
So I don't want to disappoint anybody. But you did say in the video, you didn't quite really make that clear. So unless you went to the topic thread and followed the thread, it could be quite confusing. So just to make it clear, no Canada for us. But by all means, meet Dan. He sounds lovely.
During live commenting last week, there was lots of discussion going on about making Formula One ringtones.
Yes, and Mark has come through for us, hasn't he? He gave us a link the other day for a bunch of recordings he made at the US Grand Prix in 2005.
Yep.
He's turned them into ringtones and he's put them on a website for us.
Only for the iPhone at the moment, but we think you can convert them.
I believe they can be converted to MP3. Do you want to hear one?
Yeah, go on.
This is Alonso's engine at the US Grand Prix.
Bernie's not going to be happy about this.
I don't think we care, do we? I don't give a flying fox. They're brilliant. And if I had a phone, I'd make it my ringtone too.
I think I'm going to stick with mine.
Oh, Lord.
Housekeeping.
We've discovered a new service called Dropio, haven't we?
I think it's a new service. I haven't heard many people talking about it, but it is pretty damn groovy.
Well, it's new to us anyway, and basically what it is, anyone and everyone can post to this site. We're putting up pictures, screenshots, videos.
Anything multimedia. It's even got a phone number. You know, some people have had issues trying to call our Skype number. If you phone in to the number on Dropio, you can record a voicemail, and instead of coming to us when we have to fit it into the show, anybody and everybody can hear about it. So if you're in the middle of watching live commentary and have some thoughts, you might even want to do your own commentary. You can just phone in your own commentary, and we can all listen to it.
If you went there now, though, you might see lots of helmet
yes.
designs.
Yes.
I wrote a blog post about Jensen's website. He's got a designer helmet competition going on.
Yep, had it for a little while.
The winner gets to have their helmet. He'll wear that helmet at Silverstone.
Okay, but I'm not so worried about winning it. I just like playing.
I'm certainly not going to win it.
There are better designers out there than your good self.
We asked people to have a go and post their pictures to Dropio.
Yep.
And we had quite a few entries.
Yep.
Lynch had several attempts.
You can see these, by the way, on the Enhanced podcast if you look now. This is Lynch's
yeah,
first
attempt.
Yeah,
let's put them up there.
Absolutely. This is Lynch's first attempt, and I think you can see how he progressively gets better. I think the first time he did it, he had a problem with his trackpad or his mouse. And then the second attempt, which is, I think, this one, you can see he's sort of got his eye in, and then they get better and better and better.
Alenia posted a helmet.
And that was very good. Like that one. That's blue and yellow. Containing lots of stars.
Alienora.
Hers, I really liked what she did there because she looked into the entire concept of it and understood the Make-A-Wish Foundation. bit about it, which completely went straight over my head. So that's very good from her. I like the stars on it.
You posted one, didn't you?
Yeah, I wasn't too impressed with my own work, actually. Not very good compared to other people's.
Better than mine, though, still.
That's not a benchmark.
Lou submitted one.
Yeah, well, I think hers was older. If you look at it now, you can see it's blue with a union flag on it. And I think she did it a little while ago, but she went and grabbed her design and then put
excellent.
It onto Dropier.
JB13, we don't know who that is.
Anonymous, but good.
They're very good.
Two pictures, two submissions from JB13. Very good.
And Stephen Roy, who appears to have mastered the art of straight lines in a way that boggles the mind.
They are very good. Really good pictures. I think my favourite is the red and black one. But the attention to detail is second to none. And of all of them, I think he's my favourite.
If you want to go and see them, you can go to Dropio, which is drop.io/sewpodcast.
Yeah, we link to it loads of places throughout live commenting.
Stephen Roy left a comment on the blog post and he said, "Isn't it amazing? All we get from Max is high tech this and advanced development that, and all anyone really wanted was a colouring in competition." It's too true.
It's not too late. We still want to see your designs. I think the competition's still open for quite a while longer. If you have time to spare, go to Jensen Burton's website, design a helmet, take a screenshot, put it into Dropio, and we'll take a look at it.
Whilst we're on the subject of Jensen's website, he's got an audio diary, hasn't he?
Oh, Lou pointed out, I'd never heard it before, but I like it. I like that he's doing it, and I wish more drivers did the same.
Well, I listened to the latest one, and there was a little bit of insight that I wasn't sure about.
Right, okay. Can we listen to it now?
Yeah.
Okay, let's hear it.
Arrived in Turkey, Istanbul, on Wednesday. I wanted to get in nice and early, just check everything was all right. And it was.
That doesn't really tell us much, does it?
Yeah, I wanted to make sure everything was okay.
And it was. Regardless of us making fun, though, we do want to encourage this kind of
Absolutely.
Thing.
Absolutely. And we'll look forward to the next one and hopefully be able to listen to that too.
Next week is a bank holiday in the UK.
Yay!
So we've got extra time and the show should come out at least on Monday.
Yeah, we won't make the same mistake twice then.
But the extraordinary general meeting of the FIA is on Tuesday.
Right, that's so slightly poor timing.
I don't know whether we should wait or do an extra little show.
If we wait, the show will never come out.
Yeah, that's true.
Then we'll get into a load of trouble and then we'll get more comments, which, you know, could be a strategy. However, probably I suspect the result isn't going to be worth a podcast. It probably isn't going to be worth a post.
In the meantime, the Monaco GP is this weekend, and I want to see you all there live commenting on sidepodcast.com.
Yeah, absolutely. If you haven't joined us before, please do.
But just to point out that free practice in Monaco is on a Thursday.
Because they like to be difficult.
Yeah, not on a Friday.
Okay, are you going to be around for live comment on Thursday?
Of course, yeah.
You're not going to be at work?
What, yes.
You might be to and fro.
Yes.
Okay, I'll be around. I'll be sat at the front of the computer all of Thursday, so please do join us.
I just want to point out very quickly that Bourdais is going to do really well in Monaco.
And why are you so confident about that?
Because in 2002, he got pole there and he won it.
In what racing was that? Was that something like F3000?
Some other series.
In 2002, did you say?
Yeah.
That's like 6 years ago.
Yeah.
Can he even remember which way round it goes?
I'm just saying he's going to do well.
Well, I'll be keeping my eye on him because I'm going to be rookie spotting at Monaco just in case Piquet or Stu Tittle are nowhere to be found.